Thank you very much, Louise, for that really terrific presentation, and also Julie for a really good retrospective on how USAID has been involved in this. I know we're going to have lots of questions, and I want to start it off with just asking Louise a quick clarifying question. Local markets, you emphasize the importance of those. Are people buying potential seed at local markets, or are they buying something that's being sold as seed, or is it being sold as grain, or both? Just a quick clarification question, and then we'll open it up.
Yeah, in some cases, you can get certified seed in local markets, but only in vegetable packs. So what they're buying is potential seed, but you see a price difference. If it's the right variety and it's well sorted, you can get a 10% difference. So they're buying potential seed. Now, just to be totally fair, in some cases, and traders respond to this price markup. So you will find traders who are moving potential seed. They move from one agroecological region, which is adapted, to another. And then, of course, there are the cases where farmers buy grain, and then they sort it out to make it better seed. So there are different processes going on.
Okay, questions? There in the back. Remember to please identify yourself.
Okay, Dick Tinsley, Colorado State University, here in D.C. for grandparenting duty. My question is, if most of the maize is planted to market seed, should we be working with hybrids or composite varieties? And if a hybrid variety gets into the local market system, is that not a disservice to the farmers?
First of all, just to be clear about the sources for maize, I was just showing the market data, comparing two markets. There is also own saved seed and other sources. I think you asked several different types of questions. One is on hybrids. If hybrids go into markets, is that a disservice? There are people in the room who can answer that also, but I think farmers, if given information, make smart choices. Hybrids are going into markets. You know, maybe they're planted once or twice again and yield, and then they don't yield, so farmers learn. It's just a fact that hybrid maize can go into markets. And other people in the room can complement. But the other thing that you're asking is, if maize seed comes from markets, should we limit the types of varieties we put on offer? I think my teams would say farmers have a right to choice, whether it's OPV, whether it's local land races, and then they make informed choices and buy themselves from markets. I don't think it's our role to limit that choice.
Okay, let's go to our virtual room, and then we'll come back to this room.
Okay, this should be better. So we've had a very active conversation on our webinar, lots of people talking to each other and asking questions. This was a question that came out a little bit earlier in the presentation, and I think might be directed to you, Julie, but kind of has broader implications. This is from Lourdes Martinez in Washington, D.C., and it was a question about how OFDA works with different governments, and then other participants were chiming in just in terms of, you know, what is the role of different sort of USAID organizations with different governments, and also research organizations like CGIAR.
Good question. We work very closely with government, so when we're planning a response, we certainly would go and talk to the Ministry of Agriculture. All the different aspects of the government in country. We have regional advisors who are based in the field. Certainly any intervention that we would support is based on feedback from the field. And we actually can't intervene unless our assistance is requested, which I think is an important component. We just don't go in and hand out seed. But it is a very involved and cooperative process that involves farmers as well. I mean, we go out to the field. I spend a lot of time sitting under a tree talking to farmers about their priorities and their choices. And I think that's the way to do it well.
Thank you. Gentleman in the back.
Yes, thank you both for an incredibly thought-provoking presentation this morning. My name is Mike Godfrey. I work for Apt Associates. I'm the senior technical advisor to the Food, Agribusiness, and Rural Markets Program, USAID South Sudan, and I'm just back from South Sudan, and I talked to both of your teams about the following problem. How do you consider developing a reasonable internal national seed multiplication, seed markets, in the context of both the humanitarian and very much a developing context in South Sudan? We've been using imported open pollinated variety hybrids of maize, Longi 5, and a particularly well-thought-of variety of bean. We talked with the CRS teams there about letting them procure seeds through our participants. We work in the Equatorial States. So I just wanted to get your both opinions on how do you integrate this, what you've put on the screen, the humanitarian and the development side in the South Sudan context. Thank you.
Good question.
We could be here all day for that one. I think that's a great question and something that we've thought a lot about. The beginning, I think, is moving people away from the old model of direct free seed distribution and figuring out what the willingness to pay for certain characteristics and qualities of particular seeds are. So really understanding farmer preferences is one, and I think really understanding local market constraints and challenges is another. And we can do that either through market assessment or through seed assessment. I think that's paving the way. I think another model that's been tried quite a bit has been farmer level production of seed, which then goes to market. But again, market assessment is a critical component of that. If we're producing just to sell back to the NGOs to distribute for free, we're really not sustainably creating a system. So it's something we certainly haven't figured out yet, but we talk about quite a bit and are looking at all different options and aspects.
Okay, let's go back to our virtual room.
Great. This question is from Dennis, one of our online participants. And he was asking, what strategies are in place to make seed systems resilient to climate change, especially for crops like cassava and sweet potatoes?
Well, there's a growing set of people who look just at seed systems and climate change. And I would refer to encourage this Dennis to search that literature. Obviously, the things that come up all the time are things like breeding crops to deal with stress, whether it's moisture stress or heat. That is a thrust. But in addition, what climate change means is variability. So it means giving farmers access to a truly varied portfolio from which they can draw when they need it, a portfolio of crops, a portfolio of varieties. And with that comes also information, so an incredibly refined information system, which is twinned with this portfolio. This is a big change from normal seed sector development. You know, our seed sector development today means a select group of crops, two or three commercial varieties per crop. So anticipating resilience is going to be game-changing for seed sector development.
Okay, I think there were some up front here. Just gentlemen.
Hello, Brian Bartle from USDA Foreign Agricultural Service, and I was just wondering about the public-private partnerships, if that existed within the seed system assessments. And also a follow-up question, I'll stand up, on Zimbabwe. I'm just very interested in the black market. What is the black market, I guess, within the seed system? Is that seed coming in from, say, Zimbabwe, or is that, I guess, I'd like to hear more about that. Thank you.
Sounds like that's to you, Louise.
Yeah, well, first of all, on a seed system assessment, public sector, private sector are equally central. You know, so we look at seed companies, look at their stocks, look at their outreach, look at which crops. We're trying to create a term I didn't use. We're trying to create integrated seed systems. And just too much jargon in all of these talks, you've have to say, when am I going to stop introducing new terminology? But basically what a seed system security assessment is moving forward towards integrated seed systems, which they're catalytic points, so you use both. I find the private sector in some ways, some of the more innovative in saying, okay, how are you going to reach this farmer in the middle of nowhere? What do we have to do?
And the black market?
I don't think I'm allowed to use the word black publicly. The alternative market is one of course across the border. Zimbabwe is very near to South Africa, and it's very easy to move supplies by demand. In some cases, alternative currencies were used, whether it's the rand and the dollar. In other cases, barter. How many goats equals how many bags of maize? So how many chickens, how much labor? So there were alternative markets in currency and alternative markets in goods, and there was absolutely no problem with supply.
Back to our extended audience.
Wonderful. A couple of questions came in specifically about agrivets. One of the questions was, from your experience, how to maintain quality at agrivets? And then another one sort of built off of the previous question about alternative markets. And somebody asked the question about how can we make sure with agrivets that we get seeds from reliable sources?
There are some important initiatives looking at just the formal sector and agro-dealers and agrovets. USAID is funding some important work here. Obviously, AGRA, the Alliance for the Green Revolution in Africa, is focused exclusively on this formal sector. So I would encourage you to look at their work. You know, on their website, training dealers, looking at their placement, looking at their stocks. It's a huge thrust and a very important one. Equally, particularly you know this with maize, or what the Americans call corn, fake seed is a huge problem. So you should know that there are a series of new initiatives, I don't know about USAID, but certainly by the Gates Foundation, just to look at fake seed. How do we start to deal with it? Now, what's interesting to all of us is that fake seed right now has been localized to maize, because that's what's really valuable. So you color it green or pink. But if we start to go in small packs with the legumes, fake seed on a policy level and practical level is going to be another new headache. So let's deal with it now.
This is another area where I think information technologies, in terms of barcoding and such, to ensure quality delivery, both in seed and fertilizer, I think people are looking into.
Yeah, and just so you know that on barcodes, which Rob mentioned, this isn't a northern paradigm. Even in Mali right now, there are seed experiments selling packs with barcodes.
Back in this room, Ahmed Kaplan.
Hi, I'm Ahmed Kaplan, Bureau of Food Security. Thank you for this interesting conversation and discussion. Question for Louise regarding the example that you showed, and I agree with you, I hate assumption as much as you do. But in the example that you showed, you also had several assumptions there when you looked at the low, the bad year when the household produced 460 kilograms and they only need 5% of their seeds to save for the next year. You had the assumption that the amount they produce is enough to feed them and their livestock and others. You have the assumption that they have saved from the year before maybe enough more and they did not sell it to use it for other purposes such as health, education, and others. So just if you are looking at it from the numbers per se, your example is valid, but if you are building in it and testing it, how much they produce, how much they need per household or per person in the household, then your example might not be correct in that we don't need seed. They might still need seed to supplement their feed and to supplement for their agriculture.
You're 100% right. These are just thinking tools. And the first cut is that there should be enough seed, but then you have to factor in reality. You know, what is the time between seasons? Is it two seasons a year or one season a year? Absolutely right.
So I've been told we're out of time, but I'm not going to let that stop me from offering a few observations. First of all, I want to just underscore for everybody how important social science has been in this whole endeavor. I think, you know, this is a case we really can see it, and it's very important that we build this into our programs, I think across the board, but it's just been so essential to this whole effort. The question of seed system evolution, I think, is really out there, and I think Louise used that term, integrated systems. And you flagged a lot of things. You flagged the quality seed issue. You flagged the opportunity that these systems afford for actually introducing innovations in terms of the genetics, for example. That we're trying to develop. And I see new opportunities and challenges on the horizon. We have a new soy innovation lab, and Dr. Kaplan is managing that. And soy seed has special issues associated with it because it doesn't last very long, and it's low quality is a real concern. So again, to really achieve what it is we're trying to achieve by putting smallholders at the center of the soy and livestock revolution in Africa, we really need to solve that seed problem. The scaling issue, I mentioned that at the outset, and Dr. McMurdy is here. He's leading the scaling team in the Office of Agriculture Research and Policy. One of the big efforts we're doing, not just here in Washington, but in our missions as well, is around vegetable seed. So I think, John, we've got to talk, and we've got to make sure we're working with the World Vegetable Center, a long-standing partner, but we need to be talking with Julie and with Louise and other colleagues about how we can try to learn from what they have been looking at on their side of the house. Also, this whole, we mentioned information and communication technologies. We have a lead now in the Bureau, Judy Payne, on this whole issue of using communication technologies. I wonder if we don't need to give another thought to that in terms of seeds. And finally, I think this really begs the question this morning of whether we really need to step back, maybe with partners like the Gates Foundation, like the World Bank, and really look hard at how we are going to take advantage of the whole seed system that's out there from the commercial end. I mean, you heard our speakers emphasize the role of both the commercial and the informal and the connections between them. And I think this is a gap. I'm sorry Mark Heisinger isn't here because I know Mark has given more thought to this than anybody else in our bureau most likely. But I hope as we do this that we can work with you, Julie, and with you, Louise, and with others to really take a look and see. Because our missions, and I hope that we have a number of mission colleagues on the line, many of our missions are investing in seed systems now. This is a real change with Feed the Future. For a long time, we didn't have the field-based programs investing in institutions and programs on the ground. Now we do. We also have our regional missions in West Africa and East Africa looking at policy issues around seed systems. So I think the time is ripe. And I hope we can, this is something that we can do as a whole of agency and beyond. And so thanks again to fantastic presentations from our speakers, and thanks for everybody both here in the room and in the virtual world.